Over the last while, for many, many months now, we've had various conversations, discussions on this show and on the station about the negative impact on our local economy and national economy and what has been called the construction mafia. We often assume, and it is a real and legitimate issue, of violent extortion rackets going from site to site demanding work, contracts, or cash. That is very much a reality. But our next guest warns that we should not necessarily be painting all these groups with the same brush. Also about how officials, the city and departmental officials, and what they are doing to keep projects going despite the disruption. Kayla Brown is the project manager at the SA Cities Network, writing an article with this in mind. Kayla, really appreciate your time. Your article focused primarily on what city officials are doing to keep projects that are being disrupted, how they're keeping them going. But let's focus briefly on this concept of the construction mafia. We do have an issue of organized crime and extortion rackets who are trying to bleed sites of construction, infrastructure development, but also local businesses. That is very much a reality. But we've also recently spoken on this show to a business forum in Mutuals Plain, saying that, hold on, we're not a criminal organization. We're a group of concerned local businesses and residents saying that when there are construction infrastructure projects in our community, we're not seeing local people employed and we're not seeing local contractors being brought onto these contracts. And this is against the regulations and laws when there is a construction development happening. Just your thoughts on this blanket term that is being used called the construction mafia.
Hi, Lester, and thanks for having me. In the media, we hear a lot about these violent extortion rackets invading sites, demanding work or cash, as you say, in the worst cases. And while this is certainly sometimes how this phenomenon is manifesting, it's definitely not always the case. And there is a much larger and more complex story that has very specific contextual drivers that have taken place. So being economic, political, policy, and regulatory drivers, as you say, that we really need to understand in order to address this issue holistically. So to try to explain this phenomenon in simple terms is, as you've said, you know, we're seeing these associations forming of small local businesses. These are mostly black-owned, township-based small businesses. And in the construction industry, they are organizing themselves into groups known as local business forums. And primarily, they are designed to promote the use of local labor in infrastructure projects in their areas. And they typically have a defined spatial jurisdiction, often within township areas. And this is not at all in itself an illegal practice. And it can be seen as a practice almost of grassroots economic empowerment within a sector that is still very racially and economically exclusionary. And there is a lot of political and policy context for this. So since democracy, the construction industry has deliberately been positioned as a way to lift people out of poverty, not only through employing workers, but through big construction companies subcontracting portions of work packages to small, local, black-owned construction businesses to try to transform the industry and develop small businesses. And, you know, that's obviously had varying success. So an example of how this should play out is, you know, let's say the city of Cape Town was building a sports facility. They would procure a main contractor to carry out the bulk of the work, and then that contractor would be responsible for subcontracting smaller and often less skilled work portions to those small local businesses. And there is policy that is meant to enforce this. So in 2017, there was a policy called the Preferential Procurement Policy that said that all public infrastructure projects had to allocate at least 30% of the contract to local businesses. And that policy has been amended, but its sentiment is very much alive still in practice. But obviously, you know, this ideal scenario is not playing out, and for various reasons, we're starting to see the formal and legal processes being manipulated.
But in the meantime, construction is being halted. I just think of the My City development in Mitchell's Plain, and there are various other examples, particularly of public infrastructure projects. What then are city, provincial, even national government officials doing to keep these projects from being disrupted? Is it about the strict implementation of this of the policy, or is it through dialogue and conversation with these business forums?
Yeah, so what our research is finding, I mean, the key finding is that there is no single approach that is being used to engage with these challenges of SME inclusion. And between different cities and spheres of government and departments, there are varying methods and levels of engagement with this issue. So what we're seeing is that there's a very broad spectrum of engagement approaches, where on the one hand, you have officials who are very reluctant to engage with SMEs. You know, they find that it's messy, it takes time, it takes money, and they leave it to the main contractor to deal with when issues do arise, and they really rely on the main contractor to sort it out, or in the worst case, pay off business forums and essentially accommodate extortion. But then on the other hand, we are seeing certain city departments where they have the resources taking a much more proactive and hands-on approach that is based on principles of deep community engagement, as well as taking very seriously the aspect of business development and support. So in our research, examples of this were in Joburg and Nelson Mandela Bay with their development agencies, which are like the infrastructure implementing agents. And they are employing dedicated professionals to engage with the SMEs around economic development aspects of the project long before the project construction even starts. So, and then during construction, they provide hands-on support throughout to these businesses to ensure that the construction targets are being met and that these small businesses can successfully get through the project. And then when things start to fall apart, which invariably happens because it is a very hostile, intense environment, they use very innovative engagement methods to try and neutralize any hostilities and ensure that the project continues. And I mean, they're very innovative kind of engagement techniques, such as having an open door policy where SMEs are literally able to come to the department offices and have a conversation with officials. So the door is open, literally. And the project itself, from the outset, will be designed in a way that maximizes the opportunities for SMEs. With specific lower-level work packages designed for at the outset. And this is one of the key reasons why things do fall apart, is that there are simply not enough subcontracting opportunities to go around. Mm. So what would happen is when a community hears that there is an infrastructure project coming to an area, many people will register themselves as a construction company to try get a work package. Mm. And it's because it's a very low barrier to entry process where really anyone can register themselves as what is called a grade one contractor with no qualifications or work experience. So by the time the subcontracting process comes around, there can be over 100 small businesses or contending for a handful of subcontracts. And this is when these SMMEs start organizing themselves into different associations and alliances, often in relation to other power dynamics within the ward, such as ward councillors and other community leaders, and things start to get political with vested interests, and you see opportunism, and things start to become quite messy.
So you're saying that there are scenarios that when cities and municipalities largely leave it up to contractors, the main contractors, say, please solve this issue, that there is, instead of rectifying the issue when it comes to procurement of services, there is a situation where contractors will simply say, you know what, this is a payment for us to just get on with it. So in that case, you do have contractors simply just paying when there is not necessarily forms of violent threats or intimidations. It's just business groups and SMMEs saying, I have a concern, I'm not violent, but you simply said to have someone saying, well, just to appease you, here is something to keep you quiet. And that also happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this thing presents itself in so many different ways. And I mean, there's really good research done on the criminal aspect, such as reports by the Global Initiative Against Transnational and Organized Crime, that unpack this. And certainly, there are all kind of levels of paying off, sometimes, you know, in the face of violence, but sometimes just to make, you know, a problem go away. And I think cities and or government, rather, and the private sector really need to take responsibility for how they have also entrenched this practice and allowed it to be where we are today, where there's almost an expectation in some areas that, you know, the contractor will just pay up. And I've heard, you know, in certain cases where it's kind of just seen as a business line item, you know, on the budget is the paying off of unruly SMEs.
Really appreciate your time, Caleb Brown, Project Manager at the SA Cities Network. 20 minutes past 8 o'clock.